Welcome to The People's Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
What is up? Welcome to The People's Show. Thank you for making us part of your day on a Tuesday and a Canucks game day versus the Nashville Predators. Gets going at 5 o'clock today. Lots to get into before then, though. Bik Nizar, Randeep Janda, and also happy Willie O'Ree Day as well. The jersey going up in the rafters 2-2 in Boston today. We'll get into that conversation later on today, but didn't want to start it off. Happy Willie O'Ree Day, Randeep.
Yeah, it's a big day in the hockey world, and yeah, I have my thoughts, and just want to shower my shower the praises on Willie O'Ree today for sure, because he is an individual that has paved the way for a number of people in this game, and you know, it's awesome to see him in the Hall of Fame, but also on top of that, getting that number 22 in the rafters in Boston. I know Canucks fans don't generally like watching Boston games, but this one is worth watching today.
While you're listening to the pregame show later today, just tune in to that Carolina-Boston pregame ceremony and get you set for the 5 o'clock puck drop versus the Nashville Predators and your Vancouver Canucks. A lot to get into, as I mentioned. And the day started, you know, we're getting ready to talk about Nils Höglander after Boudreau's comments. And then shortly thereafter, the world that we live in reminded us protocols exist. And Bo Horvat, Randeep, goes into COVID protocol, so he's out for tonight and for the next little bit here. And, you know, we've had this conversation because it's been entertained more recently of Pettersson going to the wing and all that sort of stuff, and what is his long-term future? And ultimately, Elias Pettersson's a center, all right? He is a center. He can control the middle of the ice. We've seen him at his peak. Fantastic defender, and the game goes through Elias Pettersson when he is playing at his best, and we've seen that for 2 years. We've seen that in the playoffs, but here in the short term, they don't get his feet moving again, getting his vision back and getting more involved with the play in the offensive zone, put him on the wing. Well, Horvat's in protocol and Miller's down the middle, and you don't have that trio or even the duo that you can create to create some leverage, and now you got to put Pettersson back in the middle.
No, you do, and you hope, you know, that experiment to get Elias's confidence back. We saw the two goals against Washington. Well, it's complete at the wing spot, so you hope that confidence is back now that he's playing in the middle. But when you talk about Bo Horvat, it's tough to lose out on one of your top centers, especially after a game where his line improved. You look at that, you know, Pettersson-Höglander line, 5-on-5. Especially in the final two periods of that game, they were stronger, much stronger than the first period. A game in which he helped the power play get going as well with a goal. So, you know, if you look at the schedule and based on the current rules, seems like he's going to probably at least miss this game and the one against Florida on Friday. So you hope you can limit, the damage in that sense. But more so, this is an opportunity. I think if you're looking at optimistically to say, all right, Elias Pettersson, you showed some confidence last game. Let's see if you can hopefully translate it to the middle of the ice as well.
If you're looking at it optimistically, yes. I suppose this is the test for a lot of people. Are you a pessimist or are you an optimist? Because, you know, for me personally, I understand challenges are difficult and some people try to avoid the challenges altogether and just run a more efficient program. But for me, it's challenges get to provide you with an opportunity to rise up and overcome. And so if you're looking at Elias Pettersson, yeah, it's a bad thing Bo Horvat's not in the lineup, and they're going to have to solve it. But for Elias Pettersson individually, you're thrust into the circle again, right? This is your chance to reclaim kind of the levels that you can aspire to and you can perform at, but we haven't seen it through 38 games. And so he's got to raise his game to face a very formidable challenge in the Nashville Predators today, which, you know, the Preds, to me, we were having this conversation yesterday, Randeep, kind of tiering where the NHL is right now. And the Preds, to us, for me and Jamie, we're at the tail end of kind of that second tier because they're having a good year. guys like Duchesne, guys like Johansson are having strong years. Michael Granlund as well is having a very good year. On top of, you know, Philip Forsberg. When you look at this team right now, yeah, obviously it's going to be a challenge for Elias Pettersson in the middle again because he hasn't played that well, but comparing to who he's kind of going to get matched up against, you know, Granlund, Johansson, Colton Sissons, this should be, you know, an opportunity for him to win his matchup no matter who he's out against, despite Nashville being a very strong team this year.
Yeah, the opportunity is there. I think you look at, you know, if Elias Pettersson is playing a confident game and he has against Nashville in a limited sample size in his career in 7 games, he's over a point per game against these guys. But those matchups are not necessarily scary. Ryan Johansson's had a heck of a comeback here. He's playing strong. Mikael Granlund is showing that he was worth the money in free agency. But those are winnable matchups. I think the one line that does scare me if I'm a Canucks fan right now is, you know, Granlund on his own is not a scary player to play against. He's a good player. It's Philip Forsberg that scares you. He is, you know, on his day against a certain type of defense, you know, if you're not playing your game in transition, if you're loose, you know, he's speedy, but he's also got that physical play that he can out-muscle dudes. That's the one guy I look at this this team and say, he's a player, and he's, you know, the NHL's version of putting dudes on posters. He's done that a couple of times this year already in transition on defensemen. So I'm not worried from a head-to-head matchup. Those are not easy matchups. Johansson plays hard. Mikael Granlund plays hard. But if you've got a confident Elias Pettersson, if you've got a confident JT Miller, and we've seen what JT's line has been able to do in terms of, you know, the underlying numbers and generating chances and winning their battles, this Nashville team does not scare me in that sense. But they do have individual players that you look at and say, wait a second, you know, Tanner Jeannot has been excellent this year. He's in that Calder conversation. You know, Yakov Trenin is a player that I was wondering if they would actually free up in the expansion draft, because on a lot of teams on that third line, you know, or trade target potentially, he would have been a really interesting player. So they have some good players, but there's really one that really scares me on that lineup, and that's coming down the wing on the left-hand side on that first line.
At least amongst the forwards, right? Roman Josi does fantastic work on the back end and joins the rush so frequently and is a constant threat when you're playing him. But yeah, it'll be an interesting matchup. But like, I think with the Horvat absence, it's, you know, we'll talk about how you shape the lines and everything like that. But also, where will his absence be missed most? Because, you know, he scored on the power play recently, right? And he has a role there. Penalty killing, he's not the greatest penalty killer, but his value, an already struggling penalty kill, could always use face-off winners. And now that's a spot he's not playing. Or is it as simple as just 5-on-5, they needed another body there? Because, again, it is not just tonight, it's Florida's coming up, St. Louis is coming up, Edmonton's coming up, and if there's a delayed in his protocol absence, what role does that play in? Where will we see the absence of Bo Horvat felt the most?
I think it's still 5-on-5 because you look at the matchups that you are going to have and I think to Nashville's credit, they might not have, you can still question whether they have that superstar of a player, but they do have some balance in their top three lines. I would even argue they're all four of their lines, right? Looking at some of the wingers on their fourth line, winning those matchups on any of those top against those top three lines, it's going to be a challenge on a good night, the way that this Nashville team has been playing this year. I know they've kind of leveled off in the last 10 games, but I think the biggest, you know, impact of Bo not being in the lineup is going to be 5-on-5, because you're looking for a guy that will be able to take the tough matchups. He's going to be in a position to help generate offense 5-on-5, which, you know, with his new line hasn't happened, you know, at that level, but it was trending in the right direction after that Washington game. So I think based on today's opposition, I think it's still 5-on-5 and those tough matchups, whether he'd play a Granlund or a Ryan Johansson down the middle, those aren't easy minutes. And that's where I think the biggest loss will be seen.
650, 650 in your mind, where will be the absence? Where will the absence be felt in Bo Horvat's COVID protocols? I think I'm with you. 5-on-5 is probably where it's seen most, just because, you know, the Canucks don't provide enough margins of victory right now. And one of the things that they do have, obviously highlighted immediately by Bruce Boudreau and Jim Rutherford, is the depth down the middle, Miller, Horvat, Pettersson. You can win in that way because you should, in theory, be controlling some of the matchups. And obviously, when you go up against the elites of the elites, you can see how it goes. But against the Nashvilles, against a Washington, you can compete and you can chalk up W's versus these styles of teams because you're able to influence the middle of the ice 5-on-5. And then, hey, just don't crater on special teams. And the way the PK has been going, it has been an issue, obviously. But 5-on-5 is where it's going to be felt. And not in any one particular moment. It's just over the course of a game you notice. It's like, oh, you know, that Dickinson line was probably out for 3 extra minutes that they needed to be. And suddenly your leverage loses a bit of it falls by the wayside because you're not as dominant down the middle. So that Lamico line is done well, has held its own, but I'd be curious in an inflated minutes how that works out.
Absolutely, and you know that's the next man up mentality to a certain extent, but you mentioned the penalty kill there. Nashville, they're top 5 in the league on the power play. This is a 25.6% power play. That's up there with the Anaheims of the world. We know how Vancouver had its moments with Anaheim's power play this year. You know, you look at some of the most strongest power plays in the league, this Nashville team is up there with them. So there will be that aspect that you miss too. But you do have now a 6-man unit that you're hoping to say, okay, it's not like it was before where there were 4-man units and you were just using those same guys over and over again. And then when you brought in somebody new, it was a drastic change. You're hoping it doesn't take that much of an impact, but you're playing a team that has been able to generate on the power play. And that's dangerous the way that, you know, Duchesne's been playing. And he's been a guy that I've mentioned Ryan Johansson as a comeback candidate. So is Matt Duchesne. Like we'd sold our stock in both of these guys a couple of years ago. They've come back and they've been pretty strong on the man advantage as well.
For sure. So how do you craft the lineup for tonight? This is the way they skated this morning. Pearson, Miller, Besser, which we've seen, put Colson, Pettersson, and Nils Höglander, who we'll have a conversation about in just a second here, Mott, Lamico, and Highmore, Dowling, Dickinson, and Chiasson. So, look, you see just 2 bodies there in Garland and Horvat, and you see just, you know, how quickly the depth can kind of get attacked there. Defensively, Hughes, Poolman, OEL, Myers, and Burrows, and Shen. With Demko expected to get the start tonight. I think the options are kind of limited for what you could do with that whole situation for, you know, Horvat coming out and whatnot. It's Höglander jumps up, Pettersson slides back in, but Colson jumps up, and that just looks the way it should go.
No, for sure. And I think, you know, Dowling comes back into the lineup. You know where he's going to sit. He's in the fourth line. Tyler Mott outside of that, like, the fourth line has played well, but are we talking about him being elevated? Probably not. Just based on the fact that Lamico, him, and Highmore have had some very good chemistry. Podkolzin is the natural fit there with Pettersson and Höglander. You know, we talk about the responsibility. Bo Horvat was the player playing down the middle. He was kind of responsible for Pettersson and Höglander. Now you're going to see that shift with Pettersson going through the middle. He's going to have to be, you know, responsible defensively and have that defensive commitment. But he's also being tasked to play with guys that are still figuring their way out in the NHL. So it's funny how this has now shifted the responsibility, not only defensively, but he's all of a sudden the leader on this line, whereas previously it was, hey, we're going to, you know, just chill out, play your game, keep it simple. You don't have to worry about anything else. You got Bo next to you. Now he's not only playing down the middle, but he's going to have 2 younger guys that are still trying to figure their way out. So, you know, responsibility comes fast, Bick.
Let's hear from Bruce Boudreau, met with media earlier today about Elias Pettersson and, you know, playing on the wing and playing at center. Here's what Boudreau had to say about Petey at the center.
I mean, who knows? Like, I mean, right now he's a winger and he's done really well, but I'm sure there's going to be certain times during the season that we're going to have to play him up in the middle. And that might draw it might get dry on the wing where he needs to move his legs a little bit more and put him back in the middle. But right now, the last few games that he's been on left wing, he's looked really good, so we'd certainly like to keep him there.
That's Bruce Boudreau on Elias Pettersson. And, you know, Randy, I think in the here and now, you got to do whatever you can to get the production back, get the confidence back of Elias Pettersson. If it means playing him on the wing, if it means playing him on defense, whatever you got to do to get Petey feeling good again, that you see the player that you saw for two seasons and the playoffs, that's job one. But the long-term viability of this, to me, is muted. It's very, very, you know, short-sighted. This is all about, hey, he got two goals, let's see how this goes. But ultimately, his future lands at center. And he should be your first-line center in the future.
Okay, there's an older movie I remember seeing. I'd never watched it, but I got the premise of it. It was how Stella got her groove back. Apparently, she got it back by going to Jamaica. That's the story, apparently. Petey didn't go to Jamaica. He went to the wing. That's essentially what it is. You're trying to regain that confidence. You're trying to find that something you're looking for. And, you know, last game, we saw him, but even before the last game, against Carolina, he had his moments as well. I know we focused, and I did too on Twitter, we focused on the stick breaking and him getting tripped by Freddie Anderson, the reaction. The reaction is something that I think a lot of people don't like to see. But if you look at the rest of the process, he was improving even in those games. Now, the Washington game, that one was important because those immediate reactions on the ice to the play, the way he scores that first goal is vintage Pettersson, where he's making that move and an excellent shot. The second goal, in a lot of ways, was even more impressive, where it's an immediate reaction. He sees, you know, that the goalie has given him an excellent look off a bank shot, and he takes advantage of it. So I think getting him to the wing in the short term has helped with confidence. He doesn't have to worry about those things. But long term, and I remember talking to Thomas Gradin about this, the year, his rookie year, he can play the wing, as we've seen in Sweden. Gradin mentioned this, but he said the future is at the center position. He's smart enough, he's skilled enough, and he works hard. That's what you want from your player. We've seen it work before. It's just a matter of, as everybody has seen this year with Elias Pettersson, is how do you regain that confidence? Sometimes taking responsibility away and then giving it back when he's ready for it is the key. And I think, you know, with Elias Pettersson, it's going to be thrown into the deep end with the Nashville Predators because they've got depth there, as we've talked about. He's going to have to play the same position against the Florida Panthers if Bo Horvat's not back by then, which is probably the case because you have to wait 5 days given the current rules right now. So, you know, it is going to be thrown into the deep end, but he's fully capable of that. And the long-term trajectory should still be that. He has shown he can work at the center position. Faceoffs are one thing he's got to improve on, Vic. I think we all understand and acknowledge that. And that's something that he's going to have to figure out long-term. But he is smart enough to play that game. He is confident to play down the middle as well. He just needs to regain that right now.
Cam's texting in, 650, 650. Petey went to the East Coast and got his groove back.
There you go. Petey got his groove back by going to by going to Washington.
So I was watching the game last night, the Rams and Cardinals games, and something kind of struck me in that game about Elias Pettersson. Yes, even watching the NFL playoffs. So one of the most talked about NFL players is Odell Beckham. Obviously, he had the great highlight, one-handed catch, and he became a superstar, all that sort of stuff. Now, he's had down years. No one's disputing that. He's had injuries. That's facts. You can't argue them. He's had injuries. And his career has definitely declined. But one of the reasons, and I've sat here so many times, and people have said, hey, what do you see in Elias Pettersson? Why are you so confident that at some point he's going to bounce back? And, you know, he's not back totally. You need to see it for 10 games. But just projecting the career. You know, one of the things I say is form is temporary, talent is forever. You're seeing right now in the NFL, Odell Beckham is an example of why long term you don't bet against talent. Because again, even for the most novice of sports fans, you can see natural talent. And you can see, hey, some guys move a bit differently. Some guys think a bit differently. They're a little bit faster. They make plays a little bit more often. They're just natural playmakers. And Odell Beckham, it was in Cleveland, it's gone horribly there. It went horribly there. And it just was never really a fit, obviously, with the quarterback and all this sort of stuff. And there's, look, he can be a combative personality. I get all of that. But there's still natural talent there. He arrives in LA for the Rams, and he's got six touchdowns. They found a way to utilize him, and you see the natural ability show out all over again. And in the long run, hey, talent wins out. And if you want to use that as an example, in this conversation with Elias Pettersson, natural talent, even his biggest detractors could sit there and say, well, I don't like that he does this, this, and this, and he doesn't win faceoffs, and he's not, you know, prototypical size. But guess what? He put up just shy of a point a game for a long time, for two seasons. He went into the playoffs against very difficult competition in the Vegas Golden Knights and held his own, was the premier player for the Vancouver Canucks. I know Demko, obviously, a net, but was one of the premier players against very stiff competition and in difficult time of the year in the playoffs. You've seen what it looks like. Talent wins out in the long run.
It does. And, you know, with Elias Pettersson, the danger with this is that even when a couple of days ago, and listen, it could be back, the hyperbole of, you know, he's not the same player, he's not the franchise player. To me, it's hyperbole. To me, it's, you know, the sky's falling mentality. But the danger with that is he's 23 years old, right? When you're that young, doubting talent is a very dangerous game. It's a very dangerous game, especially when you've seen them hit the highest of levels, as you mentioned, Vic. So the one thing, I kind of always cringe when I hear that, when people say trade him or do this or he's not. Hey, it's okay to limit how good you think a player can be, but to think about, all right, it's done, this is not going to work with this player, that to me is a very dangerous game, because the player pretty recently has shown flashes and has shown consistently enough that they can be that player. They've shown, most importantly, the skill is one thing, but Elias Pettersson at the center position has shown intelligence. He's shown that he thinks the game at a very high level, amongst the best in the league when he's going. So that's why, you know, doubting that is a dangerous game, especially when this player is so young. So I'm with you there. You don't sell on talent that quickly. And hopefully for Pettersson, this is a launching point. That Washington game is where he kind of sees, all right, I got it back now, and now I'm going to be, you know, a little bit more consistent. Now he's can show what he's capable of, as he mentioned after the post-game availability on Sunday.
Vic Nizar, Randy Janda here on The People Show. Jamie Dodd as well from the Canucks Hour with Thomas Drantz. We do it every day here on The People Show. We like to break out wrong answers only. So Bo Horvat not in the lineup, and we've talked about, hey, the impact that has on the center ice position for the Vancouver Canucks. But the other part of this, no captain in the lineup. The captain not going to be there. So wrong answers only. Who is the captain now? 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Your wrong answers only. Who is the captain now?
For this question, it's the wrong answer. But for me, it's always the right answer. The captain now, it's Robbie Joe-Hall. Remax, Remax his own Robbie Joe-Hall.
Always be selling. I love it, Randy.
That's awesome. I figured it'd just go, you know, we've seen the precedent get set here in Vancouver. Goalies can be captains, so you also have Halak on the bench, just keeping the guys motivated. There you go, man. Or I guess Spencer Martin. Spencer Martin should be the wrong answer.
Demko? You're skipping over Demko for the captain?
Well, he's on the ice, right? He's got to be focused. I don't want the starting goalie to be the captain. I want the guy on the bench constantly motivating the guys on the bench.
Well, I think when you look at how his role is increasing and how Bruce Boudreau is increasingly falling in love with this player, it's got to be Juho Lamico, right? Stepping up to be the captain in Bo Horvat's absence.
And you know what that would do? That would actually have Boudreau remember his name if he's the captain. He'd actually remember his first and his last name.
$650 at Bowen Burnaby. Lammy! The full exclamation point.
I know this is not very conventional, guys, but the Canucks are trying to try new things. Jim Rutherford is setting a new example. Make Jim Rutherford the new captain. Just imagine that. He's walking around the front office with a C on his chest. Setting the culture.
Yeah, just make the new GM the captain. They should have a... You remember when the big jersey avail, you know, and the passing of the torch to the next captain?
Yeah.
Maybe you do that for the next GM, next home game on against Florida. Maybe you announce the GM there
instead of a jersey, it's like a sport jacket.
He's already president of hockey operations and interim GM. He can be interim captain. Are there any other roles that need filling in the organization? You just throw some more interim titles on there.
Nick Dowd is getting some love here. Should be captain.
Okay. Oh, you know who else? Former Canuck. Chilliwack Glenn says John Garrett for captain.
Oh, let's go. Yep.
Cheech is always, Cheech right is there. The captain of everything. He's just a... This is the people's show. I can say John Garrett is a people's champion. He is. People love him.
For sure. For sure. Stance Meal getting some love from T-Man 889. A lot more Chicha texts coming in as well.
I was expecting this one. Ryan in Black Creek. The captain is a cool wet rag. It's been a while since we heard that.
Wrong answers only. Who is the Canucks captain now? Rager. Tyler Mott. Teams will overpay in a trade for a captain.
It's true. It's not every day a captain's on the trade market, man. Think of the leadership value there.
Find the hidden value in trades. That's what you got to do.
I like it.
We've got a couple coming in. Kevin on the road and Joe and Smithers. Kevin on the road says, bring back Louis Erickson for one game. Make him captain.
All right, man. Some people are savage. Unsigned text saying, Murph's haircut is the captain.
Oh, man.
Just savage.
Cold-blooded.
You know what's great? Right. Because Murph is always listening as well, so he'll listen to that.
Who is the captain now? Wrong answers only. Keep the thoughts coming in. 650. We'll get into more of it. Frank Saravelli on Canucks Central yesterday talking about some interest in JT Miller across the league. And also, Bruce Boudreau had some comments on Nils Höglander. We'll get into that on the other side of the break here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Randy Janda.
Welcome back to the People's Show. 650. If you want to chime in, doing wrong answers only right now. Who is the captain now? Bo Horvat in protocol, COVID protocol, will not be in the lineup tonight against Nashville, 5 o'clock. You'll hear the game on Sportsnet 650. Batch and Hershey with the call. Myself, Dan Riccio, pregame show at 4 o'clock and throughout the intermissions and on the postgame show as well. But what are they saying in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox for wrong answers only, Randeep?
We got Bowen Burnaby coming in with, bring in Gordon Ramsay for a game. I'd pay double to listen to him spouting his special brand of encouragement from the bench in full hockey gear. All puffy and sweaty, even though he's getting zero ice time. All right.
What is his special brand of encouragement? I don't feel like it's encouragement.
I think it'd be very similar to John Tortorella's special way of encouraging folks.
All right.
Yelling at them.
Kyle from the island. Look, we appreciate the sentiment, but I'm not sure this is a good idea. Dan Riccio for captain of the Canucks. No. That's I can't abide even for a wrong answer only.
Yeah. That one, I still don't believe the story.
It would just be pregame Spro and Biscotti for everyone, right? That's what the new regime would be for the Canucks.
That's very good. Very good. I'm sure some of the players would be down for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually might be down for that. Maybe Riccio does have captain qualities.
Hey, Reach brought in Spro for the weekend game before the Washington game, actually. I brought in Lupo Dante, Bick. You'd appreciate that. I'm not going to lie, that second hour of the game was getting a little... We needed the Spro. But don't they put you to sleep? So he is...
Oh, yeah.
I can 100% say he would bring the Spro.
I got to admit, that's a great morning meal, Randeep. It's not a good pregame meal.
We had the balance, though. We had the Spro. Yeah. I had, I'm not going to lie, I had 4 or 5 Spros throughout the process.
What did it feel like to be Dan Riccio for a day?
My heart was beating through my skin, through my chest. It was unbelievable. It was like I was on a roller coaster the whole time.
Yeah, that sounds like Dan Riccio. 650. Keep your thoughts coming in. This one says, Cheech is not the captain. He is El Capitan. There you go.
Yeah. Cheech loves his Desperado references as well. He's got... Yes, El Capitan. There we go. You happy?
All right. Yeah, I'm thrilled. Thrilled. Bick Nizar and Randeep Janta, also with Jamie Dodd here. I'm on the Canucks Hour. Go subscribe to their podcast. Go subscribe to all the podcasts. Halford and Brough, Canucks Hour, our show, The People's Show, and also Canuck Central with Sat and Dan, and also drop a 5-star review as well on Spotify, Apple, wherever you find your podcasts. Bruce Boudreau met with media today, had a couple of things. You heard what he said about Pettersson playing on the wing and moving to center and all that sort of stuff. He also had some thoughts on Nils Höglander, who's, you know, Pettersson has his breakout game. And so, you know, Jamie and I were talking yesterday, Randeep, of, okay, who's the guy that needs to have the next breakout game? And Nils Höglander was kind of our thoughts, and Ian McIntyre's as well. And he was the subject of conversation with Boudreau today. Here's the clip of Boudreau talking about Nils Höglander today.
Well, I mean, he scored, what, 13 goals last year, and was probably a great story coming out of camp. I just think that he's got some scoring potential, but he needs to learn how to play the game. I mean, he's still a young kid, and quite frankly, and I don't know, someday he might score 40 goals, but if you're going to hover around the 20 goal mark, you better learn to play both ends of the ice. And I think as a guy that played overseas, I mean, he's still learning that game. I mean, there's a lot of things that he could do better, but I mean, his natural talent is definitely there.
That's what Bruce Boudreau had to say about Nils Höglander. And I think, you know, when you see that quote in writing, I think it sounds worse than it actually does when you actually hear it and you see, you know, Boudreau's tone. It's calling a player. You have to be better. And he does have to be better. And I think it just kind of goes to, like, where is Nils Höglander in his career right now? Because he's a very skilled player. You see, like, the goals against Winnipeg. That sort of stuff is very, very special. And doing it in confined areas and tight spaces, you know, you see the natural ability. But one thing that's also stood out here in these past 8 games or 10 games for me is you haven't really seen his defensive game. You know, he works really hard. He skates really fast, or he skates really hard. He's not a high-end burner, but he skates, and he's always efforting. Mm-hmm. Is there a level to maybe over skating for him sometimes? Because you do see him kind of out of position, and it chances kind of get created through his defensive work. You know, kind of being a beat too slow, or kind of a bit askew positionally.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the pros to his game, everybody acknowledges, is the motor, right? Like, the motor is there. He is giving 110%. He's not taking shifts off. It's not like he's, you know, floating around the ice. This is a guy that really is trying out there. And him and Connor Garland are similar in that regard, that their motor is constantly going. Now, the natural skill is there. But defensively, as you mentioned, there are gaps in his game. And, you know, I'd listen back to some of the conversations that we had with Cam Abbott, his former coach at Rogla. And before Höglander officially made his debut for the Canucks last year, yep, he had a great year. Like, you know, offensively, it shocked a lot of people that he was playing in the top six, because, you know, Cam mentioned at the time too, he's like, hey, this guy is naturally very talented, but there are certain things, especially on the defensive side of things, that he has to clean up. And it's not like he answered those questions. Those are still questions that even last year under Travis Green, it was an issue, right? There was production there, but has his defensive game been steadily improving? Not necessarily. There have been improvements, but I think once you get to a certain age, now he's 21, still very young in the game, but this is Bruce Boudreau walking in and saying, hey, unless you're going to score 40 goals for me, which he's had players do that, you know, you got to make sure that you're solid on both ends of the ice. And I think this is a confirmation of what Cam Abbott said in Rogla. This is a confirmation of what Travis Green had said in the past. And now Bruce Boudreau saying, I like the skill on this guy, the offensive skill, but elements of his game, his total game, are untidy, right? There are, to your point, Vic, sometimes the effort is 110%, but is he potentially doing too much in certain cases? Is it the most efficient of games? Not necessarily. So I don't think this is a thumbs down on the player. He's a young player that has to learn that side of the game. He has to get better at it. This is acknowledgement of, I like what he does offensively, but if you're going to play more, if you're going to be a 20-goal guy, not a 40-goal guy potentially, you got to make sure that you're solid on both sides. And I think this is just Bruce Boudreau, you know, acknowledging that downturn in ice time, there's a reason for that. And that's going to be on Nils Höglander to work on with the staff to make sure that he, over time, is a better defensive player. And if you're not, you know, 100% there, that's fine. Then you got to produce offensively. And he hasn't been doing much of either right now.
You know, last summer, when we were really, you know, hyped up about Nils Höglander, and it was encouraging, and last season, we talked to Yannick Hansen all the time, obviously, and he'll join us later today at 2 o'clock as well. You know, I pitch it to Yannick of like, hey, this guy is, you know, he's got this offensive pop and really showing that he's a second liner. And Yannick was, you know, kind of a bit slower to embrace that idea. See, I kind of see a future third liner in this player. And okay, that's, you know, everyone's got their own opinions, all that sort of stuff. And now you kind of see where his career has developed, and it does feel like he can play at his best. If this team were ever to aspire to greater things, it does feel like at his best, he could be a strong third liner rather than a strong second liner right now, because, you know, the offensive production hasn't really followed up and hasn't really grown, unless he goes on a remarkable heater the back end of the season. You know, it's that level of where is he right now? And if you're going to be that third liner, man, the defensive game has to be more prominent. I think a lot of people give Nils Höglander a grace period because, and rightfully so, he's on an ELC, young player, learning the game, you know, getting his feet wet at the NHL level, because you see the offensive upside. And even Boudreaux admits it, hey, you could score 40 at some point. He doesn't have that kind of skill, and that might be a bit high for me, but he could be a solid offensive producer. But when it's not there, and you can't afford him top 6 minutes, you have to win in other ways. And that's the part we aren't seeing outside of effort. You have to contribute defensively. When Elias Pettersson was struggling, he was still kind of net neutral as far as defensive play. There was the odd play, yeah, he's on the ice, but you know, it wasn't chance after chance after chance after chance, and you just notice him blatantly out of position. He was in position, battled a little bit, lost some battles, but it was never consistently, you know, resulting in goals. Nils Höglander right now, you notice him defensively for the wrong reasons, and that's a big problem. That minute reduction stands out.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, the coach has that, you know, weapon that they can use of the ice time. And the one thing I would say, though, we're talking about a 21-year-old, right? Like, Bruce Boudreaux has issued that challenge. It's not the first time that Nils Höglander has been issued that challenge. He was challenged with the same thing in Sweden. He was, you know, challenged by Travis Green as well. So this is a new coach coming in and saying, hey, I like what you do, but you're not doing everything we need you to do to be, you know, a winning team and a winning player right now, a pro every day, you know, even on the weekend. You know, there's rumblings on against Washington that he would have been a healthy scratch if Connor Garland was ready to go that day. And, you know, that would have been him, Bruce Boudreaux, sending that message yet again. So I think with Höglander, and you talk to a lot of coaches, they say you don't really necessarily know what you have in a player, especially for a forward, until they're about 23 or so. Some of them even say 24. I know Travis Green used to say that. Manny Malhotra, one of my conversations with him early on in his tenure as assistant coach, he was saying, yeah, maybe around the 23, 24 years of age is when you start to figure out what you are in the league, and you have to find that niche. So, you know, I think the issue that he has been challenged in this way. So now it's essentially, does Nils Höglander, can he clue in this time defensively? Can he improve that side of his game? Because you're right, the effort is there. He's given us 110%. Can he figure out the defensive side of games? Sometimes it's the IQ element. You know, the hockey IQ, is that a part of your game? Can you figure it out? And if not, you're right, he might be a third liner if he can't sort that out. There might be a higher ceiling, though, going forward, though, if he can bring it all together. And I think that does provide an element for him to say, okay, this is a challenge that's been issued yet again by another coach. And now it's for real, right? He's in the NHL. Last year was kind of a honeymoon period because he was a rookie. Everybody was like, wow, this guy is putting up points. He's got effort. He's a breath of fresh air. Now the standard is shifting. It's getting a little higher. And over the next couple of years, I think, I don't think it's immediate with Nils Höglander, but he's got to show his new coach that he can at least figure out elements of that part of the game.
If you think about that age timeline, right, 23, 24, and, you know, players, if you think about a career, it's, okay, the first step is I have to make the league, so you enter the league. The next step is I got to survive. And then it's about crafting that identity. And if you think that takes, hey, 4 to 5 years, because a survival period could be, you know, 2 seasons, you know, bottom end of the roster. Am I going to stay here? How do I improve? How do I earn the coach's trust and all that sort of stuff? And then crafting your identity is that final form there where, know, ice time is a reflection of trust. It's if I know what I'm getting out of you every time you step over the boards, then I can build a game plan around you. And I'm willing to give you 14, 15 minutes. If I don't know what I'm going to get every time you cross onto the ice, yeah, like 9, 10, 11 stands out. And it's I don't know what to predict. The variance in your game is too much that I'm going to limit the minutes and limit my own exposure of how you're playing. And so, you know, that element for Nils Höglander is going to be something that's very important. And I think he's got it in him, clearly. He's got it based on what we saw last season, but that is something that he needs to improve on. And Jamie, you and I were talking about yesterday, just of players that need to take the next step. Is it fundamental that it has to be in the defensive end, or if he starts clipping at, you know, a rocket pace there offensively, does that cast aside some of the concerns elsewhere on the ice?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you can compensate in other areas of your game, it helps, of course, because, you know, the ultimate goal is just to outscore the opponents. But as you're looking at kind of constructing the roster, you want him to be able to tick as many boxes as possible. And I also just think, realistically, it's more likely that he's going to be able to significantly improve his defensive game than become a 40 goal scorer. You know what I mean? Maybe that upside is there, but that's such a high bar to reach. So I think the kind of ideal reasonable ceiling is, you know, 20, 25 goal guy, maybe hit peaks at 30 a couple times in his career, but you also trust him out there. You can play him in the middle six. You can move him up and down the lineup. You can play him in different situations.
Vic Nazar, Randy Janda, also with Jamie Dodd here from the Canucks Hour with Thomas Strantz. You can go subscribe to their podcast. The other thing to keep an eye on, as we're keeping an eye on everything up until March 21st, the trade deadline, Frank Cervelli was on Canucks Central last night, as he does every Monday with Sat and Dan. Talking about interest across the league in JT Miller. And obviously, you know, guys, we've had this conversation before. You know, do you maximize, if you were going to trade him, do you maximize it before the deadline to try to get someone to buy in for two playoff runs and you can increase the return? Or do you look into the offseason and do it then? Now, Frank Cervelli detailed one team that has a specific focus on JT Miller. Here's what Frank had to say last night on Canucks Central.
And is there, rather than maybe just futures, are there other pieces that you could bring back for JT Miller, current roster pieces that could help where you want this team to get to? Like, you know, Jim Rutherford sort of gave some hints in his opening press conference about, you know, this is not likely to be a complete teardown or rebuild. And so I think that's pretty significant. I can tell you that one of the teams, and I think we've talked about this before, one of the teams that's really been all over JT Miller to bring him back is the New York Rangers. Are there younger pieces on the Rangers roster that they'd be willing to part with rather than maybe just draft picks in order to try and make something like this work to bring back JT Miller? And how important would it be for them to be in a spot where they have that extra year of JT Miller and don't need to sweat what that looks like? I just think there's lots of, you know, interesting possibilities and names that could be part of a package for something like that, that all of a sudden it sort of changes the idea of moving JT Miller if there's something that you can get back that you can use in the nearer term.
It's Frank Cervelli on Canucks Central last night. And, you know, mentioning the Rangers to me is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Because, you know, Jamie, weeks ago, you and I were talking about this, and Randeep, we've talked about this. If you're looking to make a move for that style of trade, someone that's, you know, on the precipice of breaking into the NHL and can play for you right now and not go through this, oh, hey, we got futures and We're long-term building here again to get a first-round pick that might be, you know, 2 years from having an impact, 3 years having an impact on the lineup. The Rangers line up beautifully with the Vancouver Canucks as far as what's the Canucks' biggest need and what surplus do the Rangers have. It's right-shot D-men. They have Adam Fox. He's going nowhere. They got Jacob Trouba locked up long-term. likely going nowhere. Vancouver Canucks could really use a Nils Lundqvist or a Schneider that they have on their back end right now. Young guys who are just going to get capped on their ice time. And do you use that if you're the Rangers as a surplus to go attack what you need, some more depth up front?
It is the one weapon that they do have. And, you know, you look at that center situation with Zibanejad, damn good player. We've talked about him a lot on this show. You know, Ryan Strome's having a good year, but I guess you got to ask yourself a question. Are you strong enough down the middle? And as much as you like Ryan Strome, you like him better as a third line center rather than a second line center, or JT Miller potentially playing on one of those wings, maybe, you know, an opposite whoever you wanted to, you know, you'd have some options there you can play with. Absolutely. But, you know, when you talk about those right shot defensemen, yeah, Jacob Trouba at $8 million, it's not even a matter of whether he'd be available. It's like, do you want him at $8 million? Because he's become a hard hitter. So I think Schneider and Lundqvist are the ones that you're talking about there. And I'm sure if you're the Rangers, you want to throw in a Vitali Kravtsov there as well, who's been on the outs. But there's a couple of young pieces that you'd look at and say, absolutely, you're looking at the toughest, one of the toughest positions to address in the NHL, definitely through free agency, if you're the Canucks. You've seen that with Hamonic. You've seen that with Tucker Poolman. You've seen that with, you know, overpaying for Tyler Myers at that point. And, you know, he's having a great year this year, but it hasn't been, as we know, an easy situation there. So if you're able to address that, that would be the one team you look at and say, they got two options. Most teams don't even have one option there. Mm-hmm. So does that make one of those young kids expendable? It makes it interesting, because if you are of the opinion that JT Miller is not going to be a long-term deal in Vancouver because maybe he doesn't want to stay, or maybe as a team you don't want to get older and you want to move off the player, a move like this would be an ideal, right? You hit a spot with this organization. You address a spot with this organization. That is a obvious weak point. There are no answers in the long term, Bick, at right shot D.
650. No thanks. Terrible return for the Canucks. We're talking about central points of this deal. It's not straight across for Braden Schneider, right? It grows from there. But your central talking
your building
points,
blocks.
If you're the Rangers, yeah. If you're the Rangers, if you're the Canucks, just say, hey, the thing I need is Braden Schneider, or the thing I need is Nils Lundqvist. And you know, for me, Nils Lundqvist is a guy that is fascinating. Fascinating. I'd be more intrigued by that. I know the size profile of Braden Schneider is very attractive, and he plays with a certain level of physicality, and you can just see long-term, hey, next to Quinn Hughes, get that guy. I think Nils Lundqvist could be on the track of, you know, some underrated defensive D-man with also some offensive flair to his game. You kind of go around the league, like the Esa Lindells or the Jonas Brodins, like that style of D-man, Hampus Lindholm. I know we're talking about different hands here, but that style of D-man that just goes under-discussed about just wins with his feet, can defend with his feet, can be smart positionally. That style of D-man, I think, is going to age gracefully into where the kind of NHL is going. And if, you know, it's certainly a surplus for the Rangers right now. That if these guys start demanding more ice time and wanting bigger roles, what are they going to do? They're in a spot where they just kind of have to accommodate and try to replenish what the rest of the roster looks like. And also, I would also point out, like, a Nils Lundqvist is a previous regime draft pick. If this is a team that wants to highlight, you know, physicality, and as they've done so this offseason, is that a guy that they kind of sour on a bit?
Yeah, and that's a valid question. I think one thing to be clear here, that I think JT Miller, if you can sign him, I would do it, because I think he's an emotional leader. But the
yes.
question is, and this is where Sarah Valley's report came in and all that, is that teams are, you know, the Rangers are interested, right? If you are of the opinion, and we are not Jim Rutherford, we are not the new GM, whoever that will be, but if you are of the opinion that you should be making a move here, what is the return is what we're asking. And that's what Sarah Valley was addressing as well, because the Rangers, it does seem like, are very interested in JT Miller, and they have been for the last couple of months.
Vic Nizar, Randy Janda, we'll head to break, and we'll be back in just a minute. We'll talk to our guy, Eddie Lack, your favorite Canucks goalie. And also, there is some must-watch TV in Edmonton We'll play some of that back of if you've missed it. Leon Draisaitl and Brendan Perlini, opposite ends of the spectrum right now in the Oilers. We talked about glass half full, glass half empty, and optimistic and pessimistic. Oh, it is it's wild right now in Edmonton. We'll play some of that back for you, what they're saying. We'll get into it with Eddie Lack Taco Tuesday here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.